You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
With a black book in my hand, and look between the lines, a lie on the pages that I've turned. I met the walking Jew, religious, in his worn-out cowboy boots. He walked like no man on earth. I swear he had no name. I swear he had no name. Come on down and meet your maker. Come on down and lay first hand. Come on down. Come on down. Come on. I met Dr. Strange, loves cause before the march of time. Hey, trash can, where you going, boy? Your eyes are feet apart. Is that the end you're carrying? Shall I play the funeral march? Play the funeral march.
Stand by the Alarm, and you are on the Stone Tapes. Welcome, everybody. In the studio, we have George Mann.
Hello.
We have David J. Howe.
Hello, 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 hello.
And joining us on the telephone today...
No, Robin's just... he's just been technical hitched, darling.
So, I've been technically hitched.
Let's talk about... what are we talking about this time?
Well, this month, we are going to be looking up very much at the works of Stephen King.
So, Stephen King, who's he?
Who is Stephen King? Well, I would say he's probably one of the most influential writers of our time. That's what I would say.
I would tend to agree with you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think he's very, very influential.
And you can't just categorise him as a horror writer.
No.
Because he does all sorts of...
Yeah, I think that's it.
Novels of all kinds of things.
He's famous for his horror fiction, but he's written thrillers and, The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, so we've got a great big long vast list of all of Stephen King's kind of adaptations and work here, and it is quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
Just how much work there is that's come out of Mr. King's fertile mind. So it's absolutely fantastic.
Which leads us into welcoming Robin Pearce to the show. Hi, Robin.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, Robin.
We're good, thank you. How's Wales?
Wales is windy and wet and, just basically Welsh.
Just like here.
Welsh, yes.
I believe you have been to the cinema.
I have escaped the dungeon of the castle and I went to the cinema.
What did you say?
It called. It called me and I responded. That's the thing geek that I am. a little bit of a trepidation about going to see it because I've read the book, loved the book. I've seen the 1991 adaptation with, or was it 96?
Oh,
with Tim Curry. And I like that. And it's one of my favourite go-to. 96.
No, 27. Oh, hang on. No, that's, oh, no.
1990.
There you go.
There we'll go.
Get it,
right?
You got
there in the end.
And, you know, I was a little bit dubious, why redo it? But I've really enjoyed it. It is all that, to be honest
with
you.
That's fantastic.
It's going to put horror movies back right in the limelight, away from these idiotic horror stories, you know, based on a, you know, haunted house based on a true story allegedly happened to a sister of a brother of a cousin of an aunt of mine back in 1812. Oh, you know.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, up yours, Conjuring. Proper horror is back.
Sounds good. What was so great about it? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it is
so every time we say it, you have to have a drink. So,
well.
Okay. Oh, the it drinking game.
The it drinking game, yes.
Is this time I should start stuttering? Well, you know, it.
Oh,
very
no,
good.
No, no, no.
Some students who are going to love this program.
Can't stop doing it now. The film is a magnificent undertaking of a 1,300-page book, but it's going to be in two halves. Oh. Now, if you're aware of the story, the story itself is told in two halves with continual flashbacks to the main character's childhood battle against an evil. Now then, let's do a very, very quick, short summary of what the film, what the book is about. Spoiler-free, okay? In the town of Derry, Maine, where all Stephen King stories are set, an evil supernatural force, personified as Pennywise the Clown, turns up every 27 years and spends about a year claiming lives, usually children. The population of Derry is very lethargic about this, and they seem to forget, you know, what happened 27 years ago. So every 27 years in the cycle, it's something that's brand new to them. But this evil force resides there, and it feeds every 27 years. Now, a group of children defeat this evil because they become aware of what's happening. They are somehow immune to the amnesia and the lethargy that pervades this small town. But, of course, in 27 years later, they will have to come back and battle it again. So that's pretty much a spoiler-free what the book is about.
I think fair assessment too, yes. Robin.
The film is half the story, and it's the story of when the children first meet Pennywise the Clown, which is the personification of evil. And Pennywise is the most terrifying green clown you will ever see, up and beyond what we saw in stuff like Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which we will have to cover one of these days.
We will, yes.
And they defeat the evil, and that's the first part. That this is the film that we have now. It deviates a bit from the television version in that it's more graphic, and, you know, the sad death of poor Georgie Denborough is very disturbing. It's a nasty, nasty, graphic little scene. And Pennywise the Clown himself, you know, the film is going to stand or fall on the depiction of Pennywise the Clown. And the actor Bill Skarsgård is going to have an immense job trying to outdo Tim Curry, but he does it.
Wow.
Inspired a piece of casting as Tim Curry was, this guy is even better, and he's more than capable of amping up the scares. His presence just permeates through the film, whether he's on screen or not. And that's what makes this one of the best King adaptations I've seen. He's got this disturbing thing, Pennywise. When you see him, the face is completely still, but his eyes are looking in two different directions.
Oh, that is disturbing.
And I thought, oh my God, who thought that special effect up, you know? but it's actually something the actor can do, and he uses it. You know, he the man's pupils are off centre when he looks directly at the camera.
Very, does sound very creepy, and I think it's now on my to-watch list for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, it has to be. This needs to be seen, guys.
Can we get a score out of 10 for
that
one, Robert?
You can get a hearty 9 out of 10.
Sounds awesome.
Fantastic.
And with that, let's have some Pennywise by Pennywise. Said goodbye to Robin, and on the joining us now on the phone is Joshua Lee Friedman, all the way from Los Angeles. Hello, Josh.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, there was a moment's silence there. Oh no,
it's got him.
It's got him. It's got him.
Josh, we're doing a Stephen King special today, and so we've been talking about. Well, which we'll come back to very shortly. In fact, no, let's carry on with that.
Yeah.
Josh, I believe you've seen It.
I have, yeah.
What were your thoughts on this adaptation?
it was great. It was definitely, again, it was very much in line with all the homogenized Stephen King classics like Stand By Me, and with that sense of Americana, that Amblin-esque feel of innocence and whatnot with these kids. Like it's been done expertly, so expertly before, but you know, just this time with lots of blood and gore and great scary effects, which are awesome and scary moments. But it definitely it expertly amalgamates those two, you know, that kind of film like Stand By Me or like Stranger Things or things like that, where you know you have the kids, you have the timepiece of the, you know, in the '80s in this case, and just blending it with that, you know, subversive underbelly of evil. Which is Pennywise.
Wow.
And they did a great job. Really loved it. Really loved it. But one of the stronger adaptations we've had in a while.
And how did it stand up to you, you know, compared to the original adaptation of it? How did it stand
up? Much better. They gave it... Yeah, I mean, I'm not that big of a fan of the original adaptation. I thought it was fine up until the final moments where, you know, all the big payoff was just really poorly conceived... claymation creature chasing everybody about that can be killed with a slingshot. Wasn't really thrilled with that. This was great in that it just focused. It gave the book is huge, and it gave by breaking it up into these big films, you get this sense of they can really explore it correctly. So I think that was a big plus over the original adaptation that really serviced this one well.
And what would you give it out of 10, Josh?
Probably a solid 9. You know, it did. A little bit too into the CGI wonkiness areas, just dipped a bit, but overall the effects were pretty solid. So I give it a solid 9. Yeah.
Brilliant, right. Really. That's what Robin said as well. he thought it'd be a solid 9. I think we're all looking forward to seeing this film now, aren't we?
A little bit scared, a little bit hesitant,
a little bit worried.
Yeah, freak me out a bit. But...
It does sound a bit gruesome from what we've heard already. Might not sleep.
The gore is there. Yeah, the gore is there, but the imagery, the signpost imagery of the shocks are also there. It's pretty amazing in that respect.
So what other King adaptations do you like, Josh? What's one of your favourites?
One of my all-time favourites is Creepshow, but I don't know if that counts as an adaptation. The original Salem's Lot TV series is pretty phenomenal. The film's Carrie, just amazing. Pet Cemetery, but Christine, which is a lot of people overlook Christine. John Carpenter's Christine was amazing. And I thought that Misery was number one with a bullet. Rob Reiner's Misery was a career-defining performance, career-making performance from Kathy Bates.
It certainly was. I agree with you. In fact,
those up there.
I've just realised that Christine was the very first Stephen King book I ever read, actually.
Wow. So what's your favourite adaptation, Sam?
My favourite adaptation, well, I've got so many. I mean, I do love The Stand very, very much.
I love that too.
What about you, George?
I love The Stand, that TV miniseries from the 90s. I think it's a great post-apocalyptic it's an introduction to me for Stephen King. I was at that age where it made such a huge impression on me. But I'm also a huge fan of The Running Man, actually.
Oh,
which,
ooh.
You know, as one of the Bachman books.
Yeah.
And I suppose now I look back and it's a cheesy 80s action movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. But
it's fun, though. It's always rewatchable. I love it.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting you mentioned The Stand. It never worked for me, the miniseries. I always found it quite hard to watch and not really my cup of tea. And I think that was coloured for me because after I'd read the book of The Stand... shortly afterwards, I think, I read Robert McCammon's Swan Song, which I thought was a far superior working of a very similar idea of the post-apocalyptic end of the world scenario. But I preferred the characters and I preferred the way that Robert had done it. I mean, King's book's very good. It's obviously very acclaimed. Yeah. But for me, it was quite a hard slog. It was a big, thick book and it was quite a hard slog. But Swan Song
was pretty
it's,
big as
again,
well.
But it's as big, yeah. But it wasn't a high slot.
It was very action-packed, Swan Song.
Much more entertaining read.
Yeah, very fast-paced.
So I never really liked that. But for me, I think my favourite adaptation, or one of them anyway, is the Salem's Lot, the original miniseries with David Soul, which I absolutely adored.
Yeah.
With so much creepiness and a really, really nice little adaptation. And I love Barlow and... And the sort of the vampire creature thing in there, you know, very much based on Nosferatu, with the makeup and stuff. It's a lovely, lovely series, and you know, I quite enjoy watching that every so often. It's a good one.
I mean, one of the things that was a major fail for me was the Tommyknockers as an adaptation. I don't know if any of you saw that.
I haven't
one.
Seen that, no.
Really disappointed me. It was nothing.
But
it
the book
was so
was
far.
Quite good.
The book was amazing.
Yeah, a lot of these Stephen King TV movies I thought were they had disappointing, or they were, or they started well, I had disappointing endings. Like,
yes.
You know, The Stand I thought was fine until The Hand of God shows up. Like, what? Come on. And then, like, the Claymation Spider from It, or Tommyknockers, or Storm of the Century is another one. So that begs the question, what are anybody's, like, worst, they think they're worst King? there's plenty to choose from. I'm going to go and say number one with a bullet for me would be Dreamcatcher.
Yes.
That was terrible. What was yours?
Absolute worst.
Interesting one. I mean, I'm just very quickly looking down the list here, and it's difficult. I think the Children of the Corn ones are a bit weak.
It's got to be the Lawnmower Man.
Yeah,
though.
Lawnmower Man, possibly.
What was that one we were watching recently with Emperor Ming?
Emperor Ming the Merciless.
that was playing it.
Oh, Needful Things.
Really think that was very good.
Yes.
It
isn't
irritated
it?
Me, and I think Christopher Plummer's daughter was particularly annoying.
I think the Mangler is not well loved
as
well.
Yeah, no, that's not very good either. No, yes. I do remember that. So, Josh, we haven't spoken to you for many, many months, and we really have missed you. Yeah. Have you got a cocktail that might fit into the Stephen King genre here?
Yeah, this is one I've been actually making for years. I think definitely fits into the this category. The you know, the standard ingredients for a Bloody Mary, if you like a good Bloody Mary, you know, you have your tomato juice and your Worcester sauce and your horseradish and your vodka, of course, and whatever garnishes. Well, what I do, I just stop by a, I used to stop by a little sushi place and grab some supplies on the way to, like, whatever bar I was working at. And I would make these Bloody Marys where instead of Worcester sauce, I would use soy sauce. And instead of horseradish, I would use wasabi. Now, mix that up into your Bloody Mary. Now, mix that up into your Bloody Mary. Now you have a screaming Bloody Mary.
That's fantastic.
Love it.
That, I think, would be the perfect cocktail for your King episode. Hey, speaking of Stephen King, did you guys check?
Not yet. Not quite.
Oh, sorry.
That sounds amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show again, Josh. And until next time, we hopefully speak to you again.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Bye.
Cemetery by the Ramones. And joining us now on the phone is Patricia H. Ash from Texas. Hi, Patricia.
Hiya. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
Hello, and the H stands for?
Hottie.
Hey, there we are.
We're missing you in the studio today, but how is it in Texas?
It is sunny and gorgeous. Not a cloud in the sky, not super hot, very warm, but not super hot. Nice breeze going. I have amazing weather.
And now we're all wishing I hadn't asked that because we're jealous because it's not so nice in windy Lincolnshire. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're talking about Stephen King today, Patricia, and adaptations. Do you have any favourite Stephen King adaptations for TV or film?
I would say my favourite adaptation has got to be The Stand.
Oh,
see? Yeah, I love the book.
Except me.
Everybody
likes it except me. Why is that?
Well, I really love the book, and I think that the length of the miniseries, you couldn't do The Stand in a movie. It's there's too much in there. So the choice to do that as a miniseries, pretty amazing, and made it a really good adaptation. Also, I think Stephen King was really involved in the script for that. So it just,
wow.
You know, he's a really good writer, so that's what happens.
And I think there were some really great performances in that particular adaptation, wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Rob, you mentioned Rob Lowe when we were talking before, didn't you? He's such a fantastic actor, and he does a great performance in that.
He really does. And one thing I really loved about The Stand as well was the music scores. I don't know if any of you remember that. The music was really good. It had, I still have one of these songs, Hey Now. I can't remember what it's called, but I've got still got that going through my head, and it was a brilliant song. Mm.
So that was one of the main themes. I decided not to choose Float On by the Floaters because I thought that might be a bit obvious for the It connection. But I'm going to have to watch The Stand again, I think. I think I'm going to have to reevaluate. Have to try and find it.
It'd be interesting to know how it holds up after all this time.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we need to. I think we definitely need to. Maybe we'll come back and talk about it all again, with hindsight, as it were.
Yes.
David, you've got a very interesting.
I have. Well, we were talking about Stephen King, and the question came up. So who has got the most film or television adaptations of their work out there? You know, what authors have had the most? So I did a little bit of checking on the old interwebs, as you do. And very interesting. Top of the heap, absolutely hands down, it's a certain writer called Mr. William Shakespeare. Apparently, he's.
I think I've heard of him.
You think I've heard of him, yes. He's apparently got 410, according to Wikipedia, but he's actually credited on IMDb as writer for 997 movies, shorts, and TV series.
So presumably some of those are where people have done modern versions.
I guess there's adaptations and all sorts of things. But, I mean, nearly 1,000 adaptations. That's extraordinary. Next down, you've got Charles Dickens, 340 times. And then it gets very interesting because we have Alexandre Dumas for 256 times. And apparently, his Alexandre Dumas's first credit is a movie short by George Albert Smith from 1898.
Wow.
Wow.
So I was going to say, how many times can they make The Musketeers?
Yeah.
Wow.
But then you've got Fyodor Dostoevsky, Victor Hugo, Leo Tolstoy. We've got Jules Verne 153 times. Then Stephen King comes in. So he's kind of a little bit down the line here. But what particularly interested me about this list is that we've got Stan Lee here and Edgar Rice Burroughs, but we've also got Sophocles and Euripides and Aristophanes. And it's kind of like, eh? How does that work? So did you know that Sophocles has had more adaptations than Jane Austen?
I didn't know that.
That's absolutely crazy.
This is like pub quiz time here. It's extraordinary. And Aristophanes has got more than Tom Clancy.
Wow.
It's amazing. So then we looked.
Wow.
So then we looked at the living authors. So never mind all these dead Greeks. It's extraordinary.
Oh dear.
It's extraordinary. The living authors with the most adaptations. With six, we've got Stephanie Meyer. Because of the Twilight and stuff. And Larry McMurray, who I've never heard of, but never mind. At seven, we've got Nick Hornby and William Goldman. So kind of literary sort of stuff going on there. At eight, we've got Clive Barker, Dean Koontz, and Philip Roth, who, again, I've not heard of Philip Roth, but I think he's
a literary writer as well, yeah.
Nine, we've got the lady herself, Miss J.K. Rowling, and John Grisham. Nine.
He's legal.
Yep.
There is, yeah.
At 10, we've got John le Carré and McEwan.
You know, how have I seen all of these? And looking at the list, I've seen a lot of them, but I haven't seen them all, which is very, very interesting, considering I really like King's
And
work.
I think, Patricia, you've got another one you want to talk about now, don't you?
Yes. I watched and read Children of the Corn.
Oh.
Which is a short story that appeared in his first book of short stories, which I wrote down somewhere and then promptly lost. Night Shift.
That's what it's called.
That's what his first collection of short stories was. And there are a lot of the Stephen King movies are from stories in that particular collection, which is what I thought was interesting. I would say that The Children of the Corn is a very good adaptation. But there are major differences between the movie and the short story. The short story is, of course, super creepy, very atmospheric. I'm terrified of corn now. I've got these cornflakes that I was going to eat for breakfast later.
Is Texas famous for its cornfields?
I really don't want to eat the cornflakes because I'm afraid of he who walks behind the rose.
Well, don't put them in rows then.
Oh, okay. I'll just stick them in a bowl.
Stick them in a bowl. It's probably much safer, yes.
Yeah.
So how do they compare? How do the two compare? The film.
Well,
the story.
There's some differences, which you had to do because it's not a very long story, and it's not formatted in the way that a horror movie is formatted, because in a horror movie, the characters, like, take on the big bad horror thing and usually win, with a question mark, is it really dead? And in the story, everybody just dies. It's like, it's a creepy town. Here's some really terrifying children. That's it. But in the movie, they go more into the town of Gatlin, Nebraska, which I should have looked up whether that actually exists or not. I don't think it does. It's certainly not on the map in the movie.
Interesting.
In the movie, they go into a lot of what happened, and there's a few extra characters. Like, they're in the story, all of the kids are evil. In the movie, there's a couple of kids who are not evil.
Right.
And I think they obviously do that to make it less bleak, to make it a little bit more convincing, because not everybody's
bad. Well, plus you have to take a short story and you have to get, like, 90 minutes of screen time, you know, out of a short story. And, you know, if this story is only, well, I don't know, 5,000-10,000 words or whatever, that's actually quite challenging, unless you're going to add in a lot more happenstance and background and characters and stuff. So it kind of makes sense. So which would you say you preferred, Patricia?
Ooh, you know, I think I preferred the short story.
Right.
Because in the movie... There are some problems with the script. It gets a bit heavy-handed with some religious philosophy, and I'm like, okay, really? we're in the middle of a horror movie, and you're preaching to me? Okay. I'm not a fan of that, but the short story was just brilliant, like every word, super brilliant. some other things they changed from the short story to the movie, I think this was to make the main characters, Bert and Vicky, a little more likable. In the short story, they're a couple who are just absolutely coming apart. They're on the verge of hiring a divorce lawyer. In the movie, they're a lot nicer, full stop, and they're a lot nicer to each other, and they're in a different part of their relationship. They're dating, and she's sort of fishing for a marriage proposal, which he probably intends to do, and at the end of the movie, you're like, well, okay, you know what? Next, when they get back to civilization, he's probably going to just immediately propose.
Wow,
he knows what's good for him.
So did you?
So they changed that.
Have you got a rating for the movie out of 10?
For the movie, I would say 7 out of 10.
And the book?
And for the short story, I'd say 9 out of 10 because it is so very creepy. That is the most intimidating corn I have ever read about.
Thank you, Patricia.
We'll talk again.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid. Just as long as you stand by me. So darling, thank you.
mountain should crumble to the sea. Just as long as you stand by me.
This is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
And our new feature from last month, George is going to take hold of this time. So,
put it down, George.
I'm going to talk a little bit about what happened this month in history.
In history.
In history. So, can you guess? 90 years ago, on the 7th of September.
Oh,
no.
90 no. years ago.
90. The American inventor Philo Farnsworth, who was only aged 21,
right,
demonstrated the world's first fully automatic electronic television system.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Television system.
Television system was invented 90 years ago. Wow. Or rather, it was demonstrated 90 years ago.
Wow.
Having been invented... well, he says he was a farm boy, and the idea of scanning images as a series of lines came from him ploughing fields in a regular pattern.
Now, that is fascinating.
That's crazy,
so,
isn't it?
So, lines on a TV set,
furrows
in a field,
yeah,
and he thought...
And working on a farm, seeing that. And that's crazy,
that's extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary.
I can't even put
flashes
those two
of genius.
Things...
I know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
90 years, eh?
Robert's
rejoined
us.
90 years. So I think Alex probably saw the transmission, I think, as our silent producer here. Because Alex has seen everything. He's seen everything that's ever been transmitted on television, ever.
What do you think of that, Robin?
I'm just absolutely amazed. The guy was either a genius or he was just crazy.
Probably a bit of both, I'd imagine.
We'll all make a television out of that.
Exactly.
I think these things do sit on the same fence, don't they? Crazy one side, genius another.
So we're going to skip forward 10 years now, working in a different medium. A very famous book was published 80 years ago, in 1937, and that's J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit. 80 years ago.
Oh, doesn't that make you feel really old? I know I wasn't born then.
I know.
But I feel like it was something that I knew as a child.
Yeah.
So.
And it's kind of the start of the fantasy genre proper, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I know. Because it predated Lord of the Rings.
I believe so, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Or at least when it was published.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's where genre fiction fantasy comes from.
80
really.
Years ago, gosh.
I know.
What, so 79 years ago, he started the film adaptation.
And then 50 years ago, we're going to 1967 now.
Ooh, okay. Can you guess what happened 50 years ago in 1967, Robin?
I was 7 years old.
You might have been the right target audience.
You might have been the target audience.
Yeah, I suspect you would.
Put us out of our
Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons made their first appearance on UK TV.
The only TV series for kids where the hero gets murdered or killed or disemboweled every week.
Every week. And in the credits.
And my favourite of the Super Mario Nation programmes.
I used to love Captain Scarlet.
Captain Scarlet's brilliant.
I do vaguely remember
seeing it. And a brilliant theme tune.
It was.
Do you remember at the end they used to have the voiceover saying, "Captain Scarlet is indestructible. You are not.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a puppet. Fantastic. You're real.
It's a puppet.
So we're going to move forward 10 years again. This time 1977, 40 years ago, on the 5th of September, NASA launched the Voyager 1 spacecraft.
Wow.
40 years
on a mission
ago.
To study the outer solar system. So a load of those really important photographs, really, yeah. I suppose, were taken at that time in the 70s. And I guess that's you're seeing lots of great science fiction films around that time as well, probably inspired by stuff that's happening.
And haven't we heard that the technology in our mobile phones is more than they had at NASA 40 years ago?
Yeah. That's amazing.
You know, a modern scientific calculator is more than they used to fly to the moon.
And I'm fascinated here because we've got this written down, and it says it is still operating and in communication with Earth.
Wow.
That's quite incredible, isn't it?
40 years old.
40 years old.
Yeah.
Those fridges haven't lasted that long. <you know? laughs> Extraordinary.
This was obviously built to last.
It was.
Now, this next one makes me feel really old.
Yeah.
30 years ago, on the 26th of September, 1987... The first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation was broadcast.
That was 30 years ago.
In the USA.
It wasn't shown here for a couple of years, though, was it?
No, that's right. It's 1990 over here.
Encounter at Farpoint.
But it was September 1990 here. But yeah, 30
years. Yeah, but even that, when you look back, 1990.
Make it so.
I know. I still think of the 90s as recent. And
Me too.
That's part of the 90s for me.
It's amazing.
I can't even get my head around that. 30 years has gone by so quick.
And the last one, going back 25 years ago to 1992, the 24th of September, the Sci-Fi Channel in America was launched for the first time.
Wow.
Dedicated channel to our favourite genre.
Science fiction.
Isn't that funny? Because we always think all of the channels we've got now haven't been around for that long.
Yeah, because I suppose over here we only had the four channels, didn't we?
So we got Sky and then...
Yes, and Sky and then Sky B are starting to open it all up.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it? 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I wonder what the first thing they showed was. Probably on Wikipedia somewhere.